It's gone past 18 hours 30 East African time, and it's time for John Sibi Okumu on Wednesday. This being Wednesday, the 24th of May, 2023, Hamjambo na Karibuni. Hello and welcome. To be absolutely with it, in preparing for this edition, I appealed to artificial intelligence for information on the number of tribes, that was the word I used, in Kenya at independence in 1963. Almost instantly, I read that there were numerous ethnic groups or tribes present in the country. The exact number is a matter of debate and can vary depending on how the tribes are categorized and classified. However, it is commonly understood that there were around 42 to 44 major ethnic groups in Kenya during that period. It's important to note that the number and classification of tribes can be subjective and may change over time due to factors such as cultural shifts and demographic changes. End of AI. However, AI notwithstanding, in the fairly recent past, South Asians, Nubians, Pembans, and Makonde have been included, one by one, by political decree in the tribal mix. I'm going to be in conversation with a spokesman for the Nubian community, but first, let's hear some answers to the question, should we keep adding to the number of tribes in Kenya?
If we just look at people as tribes, it then undermines efforts towards national unity and cohesion, because as a country we are looking towards nationalism. Sometimes we should be identified by other things.
Sometimes the government normally does this one so that it can know where do they put a lot of effort during the campaign in terms of ensuring that this tribe can either make their basket votes. So it's a question of what is the motive.
The government can share these jobs and resources to one tribe or a few tribes.
They are vulnerable to being discriminated, and also others treating them as quote-unquote foreigners.
We really need to get data back this claim by what is our ethnic numbering, the inclusion perspective.
So if you recognize these people, it means that you're also giving them a chance to enjoy those rights that are exclusively reserved for the citizens of a particular country.
Wanangu, what do you think about what you've just heard?
It is the wearer of the shoe who feels the pinch. One or two people spoke about discrimination and marginalization, but for the Nubian community, actually, the exclusion is what requires them to actually ask to be put as a tribe. Although you mentioned that the political decree, Nubians, Makondes, but actually Nubians have not been politically recognized in this country as a tribe.
So would you like to expand on that? I mean, my understanding is that they're now one of the additional tribes. I think it was President Uhuru Kenyatta who made South Asians number 44, meaning that then Nubians were to follow. Then very recently, under President William Ruto, we've had the addition of Wapemba na Wamakonde.
So surprisingly, the Nubians, we always thought we will be gazetted legally as the 43rd tribe, but it never happened. We were very surprised to see the South Asians, the Indians, so to speak, being recognized as a tribe. Then subsequently, under the new government, the Makondes and the Pembans, but the Nubians are yet to be gazetted. So as we speak, although the word Nubi has been mentioned in census and other places, but we are not recognized as a tribe in this country. And that's the problem, because when you are not recognized as a tribe in a country, and when your history for more than 100 years makes you realize that people deem you as a foreigner, it actually makes you feel excluded, and we want inclusion. That's the problem.
Well, we must go back one, Wanangu. We must go back one and define. Things are getting out of hand here. Are you Nubians? Are you Nubi? Is it Kibera, as I grew up knowing? Is it Kibra? Everything's changing, because I was told, you know, Kibra is the Nubian word for forest. But you know something, I must admit too, in Kenya, this idea of tribe is quite fascinating, because at my age, and it's a significant age, there are people within this country who are part of these groupings whom I've never met as a Kenyan. I'm not going to name them.
Of the 42.
Well, however many, but 40 plus. But I, you know, there are whole regions of the land which, A, I've never visited, and I've never met their members. So this should be a great sorrow for a nation. But I'm asking you, what are you? What would you like to be known as? Are you Nubi, Nubians?
So I think it's a matter of semantics, how people want to call. But originally, it's the Nubians. So it's a Nubian community, Nubian culture, Nubian tradition. I mean, we go back to more than 7,000, 8,000 BC as a history of the Nubians. Southern Egypt, Northern Sudan, as we know it, around the Aswan Dam. And the descendants of that are the current Nubians, but we are all over the place. So we...
Usema,
yes.
Mara kwa mara,
naam.
Kiswahili,
naam.
Ndiyo lugha.
Yes.
Na Swahili ndiyo namna ya kusema kitu. Napenda, I like Swahili food, I like Swahili culture, lakini miwaongea Kiswahili.
Kabila ni Wanubi.
Kabila ni Wanubi.
Lakini ukisema kwa Kiingereza, Nubians. But then people want to say Nubi to distinguish the Nubians who are in Eastern Africa, in Kenya, from the wider Nubian civilization and Nubian historical community. Because if you look at the Nubians, actually they say it extends all the way to Western Africa and many other parts of the world. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's the Nubian civilization. There is a Nubian culture, but these people in East Africa and ourselves here in Kenya, people commonly say the Nubis. Yes.
Shukran. I mean, I think for me, I did apologize at the outset for my... I feel badly. I'm not sort of going to bed and, you know, tapping myself on the back. I feel badly that as a nation, and it's a theme that's been running throughout these conversations, Wanangu, is just how much of a nation are we? And you perhaps will enlighten me about the history. But I come into this conversation with all sorts of, for want of a better word, prejudices or biases, and I'll express them if you'll forgive me as the conversation goes on. Let's deal with this Kibera Kibra.
Yes.
The idea that in 1963, when we became independent, what will go on? I say, I mean, and a Kibera. Now, if you say that, it's like, you pariah, how dare you? You say, how dare you? The Kibra.
Actually,
so you're making this stuff as you go along. Tomorrow you'll be Kibri, the day after.
Actually, we always used to say, how dare anybody says Kibera? We always used to feel very offended, but we didn't have a voice. Unfortunately, with the constitutional, the clamor for constitutional change, and people started listening to others, then we said, hang on. It's not Kibera. We don't even know what this Kibera is. It is Kibra. Yep. The word is Kibra.
That was the word for forest.
So if actually look at, remember, let me take you back a bit. Yes. The Nubians, the Nubi civilization, it's actually almost became sort of a creole of, you know, the Sudanese, the Southern Sudanese languages in the Nuba Hills with Arabic. So when you put those languages together, there is no word that you can pronounce as Kibera. That is a Muzungu thing for people who speak in Muzungu. Now, so it is Kibra. Just the same way, it's not Lime Saba. It's actually Lenga Shaba. But when you get all this corruption of the name,
right,
then it actually offends the people who own that name. And for us, it's Kibra, not Kibera, and it will not change. Right. Now it is well recognized.
Thank you for saying that. But I want to hit you with some... the idea before, while we sit on to, with the Vox Pops, this idea that the tyranny of numbers, a phrase that was coined in the build-up to some elections,
yes.
This idea that we want more tribes so that we can get more votes. So if I'm the one, Mheshimiwa, I know I won't be Mheshimiwa anybody in this life, however, it seems to me that if you become... number 43 under this present regime, then in the next elections you're going to vote willy-nilly for Kenya Kwanza. Is that the way you're thinking? Because I said you're a spokesperson.
So
if we treat you nicely, you'll vote for us.
So let me take you back. First of all, why are we talking about this tribal recognition? Because these people,
right,
our people, are actually completely ignored over the history. Now, the people are actually here. I have my national ID. I've been voting for the last 10, 15, 20 years.
I understand.
Yes.
So,
but when you give me the recognition, when you give me the recognition,
there's this idea, should we be actually trying to bury this word tribe once and for all?
I completely disagree.
Well, explain why.
And I'll actually go back to our religion. In the Quran, actually, if you look at the Quran chapter 49, verse 13, there's a... I may put it exactly. وَجَعَلْنَاكُمْ شُعُوبًا وَقَبَائِلًا لِتَعَارَفُوا. What it basically means is that God says, we created you as nations and tribes so that you can know each other. These are good reason why we should have tribes, why
so
we should have cultures.
If there's a homogeneity, if everybody's the same, if everybody looks the same, has the same racial...
We'll go back to the Aurelian society. No.
Right.
So we can't go back to that.
Right.
We can't have that.
So you're obliging me to recognize you.
Yes.
To recognize your difference.
Yes.
My gosh, this is going to be a rich conversation because, you know, there are lots of things where we don't recognize difference. But let's stick to the subject at hand. So you're saying you are proud to be a newbie.
Unajivunia kuwa mnubi kabisa.
Okay. Again, forgive me. Does that mean, therefore, and this is a genuine, if two newbies were to gather together in God's name, what language would they speak?
They'll speak Kinubi. It's a rich language.
Okay. So I can walk into the... Sorry, I'm going to sound like an absolute...
Yes, yes.
Okay, but I can walk into a bookshop and buy the complete Nubian dictionary, or you haven't gathered the resources to create one?
We now have an online digital Nubi dictionary.
Okay.
Nubian in Nubian language, but English Nubian, but we are yet to have a published copy. Yes.
Right. Well, the thing is that's a good point to stop. I want you to think about the fact when we come back that you're here under duress because you came with an invading foreign colonial army.
Yes.
That's the history of it.
Yeah.
But we'll take a very short break. Asante. Mwanangu, let's continue. Let's go back to what I don't know. Don't think that I'm being facetious or flippant or in any way. So there you are speaking this one language. My understanding is that the Nubi are sort of bunched up somewhere in Kibra and they are surrounded by two major ethnic groups, Kikuyus and Luos. And every time there's some kind of social conflagration, being Muslim, they are immediately set upon and they're, you know, I've never been there to witness it, but things get out of hand. Now, could they run to anywhere else? Are there any other bastions of Nubism?
Actually, Kibra is the last bastion of the Nubi, the 288 acres, as we call it. When we started originally, coming down from Sudan, through Uganda, we were coming with the British as military and with our families. That's our ancestors, how they came down. That's about 150, 200 years ago, up to 100 years ago.
But I want to hammer that. Point home because I sort of ended on it.
And
these are people who went and joined an army. The British, as they did, they sort of the Wakamba, good military people.
Yeah, yeah.
So they went off and found a significant number of people who were Nubi.
Yes.
And they conscripted them into their army.
Yes.
They couldn't go to a certain level, they didn't become... But they were foot soldiers. And they traveled on foot, because they weren't sort of, you know, getting Mercedes Benzes. They traveled on foot until they got to this part of the world.
Yes.
And then, with independence, let us say the British exited, this is what I know, left them about 4,500 acres of land.
In Kibra. That was before independence.
Before independence.
So let me correct you. Because you actually admitted to some ignorance about it. Yeah, so let me educate you about it. So coming down through Uganda, along the way, wherever there was a garrison, they will settle around that garrison. That's why you have Kibos around Kisumu, around Nakuru, around Kisii. Then Kibra became the biggest, because, I mean, this became the capital city. And then we went all the way to Mazeras, Mombasa. So along the way, Mumias. So we have all these stations. Whenever the British will set up a garrison, the Nubis who are supporting that garrison, as they retired and their families, they'll have a settlement. So in Nairobi, Kibra became the biggest settlement. And actually, at that time, you're talking about all the way from St. George's Hospital, they call it Kenyatta National Hospital now, all the way to Ngong Forest, that is, if you go to the showground as we speak, up to Langata Road. So all that 4,197 acres was actually given to the retiring soldiers in around, actually, just before the First World War. And during the First World War and the Second World War, they were conscripted again, fought, and when they came back, they settled there. That was basically their pension land, and that became what was known as Kibra. But even before independence, that land started being taken away, chopped bit by bit, until now they have nothing literally left.
Okay, so they, normally when people take things away from people, they put up a resistance.
Yes.
So there you are, you're chimbering my little kaplot.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take too kindly for it. They went down from 4,000 acres to 300 and took it all in their stride?
So, as you called me, Mwanangu, but I'm not that young, yes. I remember very well when I was in primary school, if you know the current Moi girls, have you been to Kibra?
Yes, I have.
You know the Moi girls, you know,
yes,
the DC,
yes,
as they're going to the showgrounds.
I spent a significant,
yes,
my starting out,
yes,
was Kibra Olympic Estate.
Now,
I had my little palatial.
So that Olympic Estate, it's actually called Galalima. It was part of what was grabbed. But I saw personally, firsthand, in the early 80s, under President Moi, we had a settlement next to Moi Girls. One morning, and I could see it, and it will never get out of my mind, you have all these tractors, I mean, and this, whatever, coming to demolish and breaking the houses, and people are running away. What you were asking earlier, was there any form of resistance? This was brutal eviction. And there's nothing literally you can do to the powers that be. So, yes, we want to resist, but you're talking about government.
I understand.
Yes. So it's not like we just took it happily and willingly, but this was brutal eviction, and it went on even up to very recently.
So with the demarcation being made clear that we are going to evict you, but this little patch, you can quite happily live there.
No, that was not quite happily. So what happened, as people were being evicted all the way from Harlequins area, all the Ngumo, they kept going central and central, and eventually what you have now as the 298 acres around Makina, the guys who are there were in the central, but they were welcoming the other people that are being evicted. So it's not like the government designated that area as the place to have these people. That is the only area where they could all concentrate. And I remember my late grandfather would tell me, it's just fortunate that we are all here, others are evict us and we have nowhere to go. You asked earlier on. So the Kamba were conscripted into the army, but they could go back to their homes. The Nubis have nowhere else to go. So Kibra is our only home,
okay,
that we know.
Let me be... you could argue, yes, in this whole national debate about home guards, and given your relationship to the colonial powers, you should be victims because historically you were on the wrong side. What does the nation owe you? I'm just asking you that as a terrible question from the back of the class.
I was going to ask you, but since you're done doing the asking, I was going to ask you the wrong side of who. But the history of the Nubians.
At some point in our conversation, you're going to be claiming something.
Yes.
And you know, any minority group, Mwanangu, any minority group the biggest insult or the throwaway when, you know, rationalism, of course I know as a rationalist that I'm arguing, you know, the devil's corner. They'll say, Rudi kwenu, rudi nyumbani. It could happen to me. Okay. I could be told, you know, go back to the lake, or, you know. So it's the least line of resistance.
Yes.
But you have the added problem of saying, where is Nyumbani?
Yes.
So where should you be? You could say to the Somali in Kenya, go back to what were the colonial boundaries of Somalia. And yes, we've addressed that question.
Yes.
Yusuf Hassan.
Yes.
What about you guys? Where are you going to go back? Where is the promised land? Where is your Israel? Where is your Canaan? You know,
exactly where... Na hiyo ndo shida yetu ambayo imekuwa wakati huo wote. Because everybody will say, rudiri kwenye kule Sudan. What Sudan are we talking about? What South Sudan are we talking about? Because if you look at it very objectively, so to speak,
for that, the South Sudan, where people are very tall.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're very, very tall.
Let's look at it. Let's look at it. Let's look at it. Let's look at it very objectively. This is a generation of descendants who came from 1802-1807 as initially as soldiers to the British Imperial Army and the British Protectorate. As they were coming, they were traders. I mean, they were basically protecting traders. They not only worked for the British, they also worked for the Germans. They also worked for even the Kabaka of Mumia and other people.
Is mercenary a bad word to use?
I'll say they are professional soldiers. And they are very well recognized. And that is why,
yes,
if you go, if you go here on, is it?
These are the working things of prejudice. You know what I'm saying? I'm hitting you with what people...
Completely.
You know, there are lots of people who got 1,000 insults.
Do you know there's a statue of the Nubians just outside here, just past here, Londra House?
Yes, the three people, yes, standing.
Those are actually...
The Kariakor.
Kariakor.
The Kariakor.
Kenya African Rifles.
The Kariakor, yes, who were there to carry the weapons.
Now, that is a misnomer. Because one of them is a Kariakor, the one who's holding the staff in his hand. Right. The others are actually having guns. They're actually soldiers. And they fought bravely, both in the First World War, in the Second World War, and during the Mau Mau, if you don't know, Kibra became one of the hiding places for the Mau Mau. President Kenyatta was actually hidden there, because what happened? These are professional soldiers. The war was over. They are retired here. They started actually siding with the local population against the British Army because they are soldiers.
Okay.
So we actually have a history of great contribution to this country, initially as professional soldiers to the power that were, and subsequently to all the subsequent movements that happened. So it's not like we had a fly-by-night mercenaries coming here to plunder, and that's why we had nowhere else to go.
I'd like to ask again, and I, from my scant reading,
yes,
even if you have this land,
yes,
we're all ngangana ring for hamna title deed.
Say to kuna title deed ya 288 acres, but we are claiming for 100.
That title deed, who gave it historically? Because we're doing Kenya 60.
So
who are you grateful to, as opposed to for?
That's, yes,
the ray, yeah.
So,
to whom are you grateful as an administration?
So, interestingly, in the 1930s, I think it was 1938 to be precise, the 4,197 acres that were given to the to the Nubian soldiers as their pension land was actually gazetted. So, this was actually gazetted land that they were given even shamba passes. But now they became shamba to slums because people started chopping, as you're saying. Yeah. Now,
Go back and, yes, an explanation.
Yes.
This idea of Kuana Pass, you know, the shamba pass.
Yes.
So it was a bit like, again, the younger than you in your 40s,
yes,
and much younger than me in my 60s, there were people who were, was there a kipande? Because everybody said,
Nubians never got the kipandes.
Were you given a sort of chain around your neck?
No, the Nubians never got the kipandes.
Right.
You can say fortunately or unfortunately, because they were considered soldiers,
right,
within the city, but they actually had shamba passes. Basically, it's like a form of land allocation, like what happens in other parts of the country where they don't have a title deed, but they have been given an allocation. They have a certificate showing that they are the owners of that land, which is communal, which is divided. But subsequently, as it was being chopped off, they had nothing left. And because they never had title deed, they could not participate in any socioeconomic rights that other people are getting. And they'll be told by the administration of that time, go back to wherever if you want to argue with us. So when President Uhuru and Deputy President, who is the current President, William Samoei Ruto, when they got into power, actually before they got into power, they said the Nubians have to be given their rights. And that's when the whole conversation came. And as soon as the president, Uhuru, became president, he actually gave us 288 acres. By that time, before Uhuru was Kibaki, and he had demarcated 700 acres, which was basically now the slum, because everywhere else was built. And there was a discussion. They said, we will give you 300 acres as the newbies, and the other 400 acres will be used for slum upgrading for the other communities. So the 300 acres was subsequently chopped off to 288 because they took part of it for the DC police station and the law court. So we are left with 288. It was given by the previous administration.
Asante Mwanangu, could I give you a minute and a half to explain, because the time is not on our side.
Yes.
These other communities.
Yes.
Now let's go happy.
So
how are Jaluo and Akikuyu?
You should have
been there, because you should have chased them away with clubs and stones.
Now why should we chase away anyway?
Okay, sorry.
Because this is a free country.
Okay.
Remember that by the time we're having independence,
yes,
there was a famous rural-urban migration.
Yes.
And during the rural-urban migration, a lot of these other lands, the South Asias, as you call them, they had their Panganis, Parklands, and the rest, which was they were able to build because they had their title deeds. The Nubians couldn't do any much development there. So they started actually putting up cheap houses, because that was the easiest thing to do. Mud houses, that's where I grew up. And as a result, these guys were coming here, the Luos, the Luyas, and all these people, they'll come here and they became our tenants.
Time for another break, and I'm learning by the second. Thank you so very much. The best mix of music. Capital FM. Mwanangu, we have to continue with our conversation. May I nianze na siasa. Unajua kufikiria mnapigana siku za maandamano, kuna msikiti lichomwa. So you're not living in perfect harmony with the other communities in the land. Could I sort of like try to niggle you about the politics of the situation? Because you should be all suffering together.
So what's your question?
My question is, why in the perception, then 2007, you have distinct memories.
Yes.
I had my relations, whom we're monitoring from wherever else I was living in the leafy suburbs. But the idea was that where they were in Kibra, they were likely to be killed, because that was hell on earth. But the idea is that shouldn't the disadvantaged, shouldn't the poor come together to realize that they're suffering together?
So I've learned something in my few years, as you call you, I'm a young person, but the more marginalized people are, the more deprived people are, and when they are all in one cage, they start fighting like animals. That's the reality. When people are deprived, when they are fighting for whatever is little, you just need a small matchstick to be lit and up in flames. You won't hear people fighting for anything, and I'm sorry to give this example, in Mount Kenya region for that matter, because life is in abundance. But when you go where people are marginalized, and that goes to all marginalized communities, even if you go to the Northern Kenya and other places, because you are fighting for very little resources, anybody can incite you against each other. And that's exactly what happened, because politicians were using it to their good end, and because these guys are paying little rent, and we are depending on that little rent, when they get incited, we start fighting. That's basically what happened. But because we are people who have welcomed them with harmony, and as a result, even during the last Maandamano, it never got out of hand, because we are peace-loving people. Nubis are peace-loving people, very hospitable, and sense prevail, and we say, look, you are on our land, you are our tenants, can we reason together? Forget the politicians who are trying to incite violence.
Mwanangu, I'd like you to go back for an explanation again now, the politics of, because it was basically, let's talk kiddies week, There was a big piece of land which was diminished to a little piece of land.
Less than 7% of the original.
Exactly. So you must still be struggling. So there's a struggle for you to become a tribe number something, and we hope that it'll be a number, you know, below 50. So there's a struggle for that. Your generation, what are you struggling for? Because my understanding is that you've never had political representation. There isn't a nominated MP, you've never had an MCA, you've never had anything. And you still consider yourselves citizens. I thought the whole hallmark of democracy was that everybody had a stake. Then we pick a kura because your vote counts. Don't sleep in it. You've got to make, you know. So what choices are you making?
So
whatever you choose, I'm sorry to rub it in, whatever you choose, you have no voice. You are the quintessential voiceless.
You have nailed it on the head. Oh. We are voiceless. Okay. We have no representation. We have no recognition. We are not even considered as citizens of this country. We have always been seen that these are people who should go back to their original land.
So
that's what has been prevailing.
Without a passport.
Now, as an individual sitting here, I was fortunate enough to get to be educated, to get to school, and to actually be able to access some of these rights. But the vast majority of the newbies, the vast majority of the Kenyan Nubians lack all this access. And actually, that's why you'll find the Constitution of Kenya even says when you have a child who is less than 8 years, but their origin is not known, they'll be automatically considered as citizens. And the African Commission for Human and People's Rights actually made a landmark ruling for the Nubis, saying their children's rights have been taken away, their socioeconomic rights have been taken away, and the government must enforce it, both about Kibra and other places. We, because of that lack of recognition, that lack of participation, that's why when we started, I say the person who wears the shoe knows where it pinches. For people like you coming from leafy suburbs who've never really felt it, you'll never understand how bad it is. I don't want to go too many years. I can actually give. Mm-hmm. I have 4 children and I have a grandson. 3 of my children now have turned 18. My youngest who just turned 18, the third born who just turned 18, just the other day. These are very graphic example of the situation you have been faced with. Despite me being in my favored position in society, I go to the DC asking that my son wants to get an ID. I have to go to a vetting panel. That vetting panel, unfortunately, is actually constituted of appointed newbies to vet their fellow newbies. How people turn. And then you have to explain to them that I am so and so. This is my son. Then you're told you need to bring this retinue of documents. And we have to bring my ID, my mom's ID, my father's ID, other documents, including documents where I've been employed as a civil servant. As I was there, because they know me, they vetted and they said, okay, now you go to the registrar. I go to the registrar with my son and get all these documents, and they know me and they recognize me and they say, oh, so and so. Okay, so they start filling all the documents. This young girl who went to the same school with my son comes, she's Luya, I have nothing against the Luya, very young girl comes, all she had was her school certificate, one of her parents' IDs, and a letter from the chief to get her ID. Now, you can imagine, this is me with my son. As I was there, there's a young man who doesn't have the means and the resources. He had been there almost 5 times. Every time he'll come, he'll be told, go get another document. When you are in that kind of situation, we are discriminated against, when you cannot even get your ID, when you are actually made to feel foreign, I can tell you it has a lot of repercussions. And this is what we are talking about. When you talk about recognition, it's not just for the sake, it's not just a number. It actually determines people's lives.
May I ask where your children would have been go to school? Because they're certain you want to profess your faith and you have a desire, you have ambitions, like any parent,
yes,
for your children to do better than you,
yes,
to end up in better circumstances.
Yes.
So does this discrimination run to education?
Yes.
Are you creating your own schools, and therefore are they being taught by definition by Nubian teachers?
My children, we don't even have Nubian schools.
Where are they going to school then? The South Asian community, they spend their millions and build their own schools.
We don't have our own schools. We go to school like anybody else. But now you can imagine what effect it has on that child who went to the same school with this other child, and this other child now turns, becomes a teenager, turning adulthood, gets a free pass to everything, and they have to get all these hurdles. That has a devastating effect. Now you can just imagine, that's just for ID, for citizenship. How about all these other things we have missed generations and generations? In fact, I was going to just tell you this. The whole of Kibra, for all these years, we've never had any government installation within Kibra. Not a school built by the government, not a hospital built by the government since independence. So we are talking about Kenya at 60. You're talking about a community in the city who have been completely marginalized and discriminated against. That's what we are talking about.
Let's look at headlines.
Lini.
Everybody who goes there says, I read so much about they're going to transmogrify Kibra. It's going to turn into this thing. It's going to be turned into a block of flats.
Cause and effect. Hii sababu tuko nayo sahi ni kwa sababu ya kuwa hali duni.
Okay.
Because you are in a place where you don't have anything. You don't even own the land. You cannot even assert your rights to that particular land. What happens? The politicians can come and run over you. I have nothing against the Luos, but that's why they could be dumped there and be crowded there to be a voting basket for a particular political group. So it's not by choice. It is actually part of the suffering.
Okay. Let's try for more information. We're now talking about Wanangu, the struggle, and there's so many people everywhere who are basically struggling for the betterment of their lives in any community. African Americans, you know, they're being stepped on, you know, until they. We all read this. Before we get there, has there been anything positive since December 1963, since Madaraka Day 1963, can you point to some significant milestones for progress?
Among the Nubian community?
Yes.
The only significant thing that ever happened was the 288 acres that were given recently, 10 years ago, and recently the government appointing a task force to say, what are you going to do with these 288 acres of land? Everything else is basically luck. Individuals. You have a few individuals here, like the famous Kasongo, who was a boxer, got a gold medal. It had nothing to do with the system. Because when you talk about Kenya at 60, you talk about these people in this country, the socio-economic and political environment should allow anybody to be an enabling environment for everybody to thrive. We never had that as a community. So there was nothing really positive, I'll be very honest. Very few people will end up having individual brilliance. They'll shine on their own, but nothing that was systematic and systemic to allow people as a community equal opportunity like everybody else. So you don't have that equitable access.
There's a question I haven't asked you, Mwanangu, because we haven't talked figures. Do you know enough to know, the general knowledge question, how many Nubians are there in Kenya?
So I don't just have general knowledge. It's actually something I've actively researched. 10 years ago, the numbers that was done, census, by our own community, we were more than 100,000 in and around the country. In Kibra, we're talking about 20 to 30,000 newbies. But this is the problem, JSO, Mwalimu. When you have a community that is so deprived, so oppressed, it even gets to a point where some of us don't want to even recognize or to even acknowledge ourselves as newbie. When you go somewhere, you rather say, mimi ni Mjaluo, because you're in Kisumu, mimi ni Mswahili, because you don't want to be seen as a newbie, because when the minute you say you're a newbie,
exactly. Then...
you're ostracized, exactly. And you are told, go back to Sudan. So we actually might be even much more than that. And it's only this small group in Kibra and maybe Kibos who continuously identify themselves. Look at it in Tanzania. In Tanzania, the Nubis were completely assimilated. They don't even exist anymore as a tribe. But here in Kenya, we are holding on to our identity. And we are saying, despite everything, we want to remain.
You find people like the Turkana El Molo type,
yes.
of They're told that they're like only 100 El Molo, but they're being sort of like
assimilated and yes. So this is the danger we have faced.
The figure was still quite large because you said
more than 100,000.
But 80,000 you're not accounting for outside Kibra.
100,000, those ones who have identified and self-identified as newbies.
Yes.
And 30,000 in Kibra. And here I'm talking about people who have identified as newbies and they actually have documentation.
Right. So I think it's time for our last break. Let's continue. Okay, expectations. What next for the Nubian community? Because so far you've painted, if I may say so, a pretty bleak picture. And I feel guilty as a citizen. I seem that maybe I should be getting up on a Sunday morning and having the energy for it, holding a placard and saying, this is unfair. Because if you take away, remember where we came about, where we say, you came with the enemy and therefore you are an enemy. But 100 years later...
150 years plus.
150 years later, we can't sustain that for too long. So where do we go from here?
I mean, I think basically what we are looking at, number one, is reparation. We talk about 4,197 acres in Kibra alone that was taken. In Kibos, you saw what happened. The court ruled that the guys should be allowed to go back to their land in Kibos. And Professor Anyang Nyong'o was actually part of that process. So what we are saying, first of all, reparation for all the injustice, the historical injustice. And reparation is not only economic. We are also talking just that apology and recognition. Two, we want recognition as a tribe. Why will the Makondes and the South Asians overtake us and we're here? That is second. Gazettement.
Let's go back. Let's take them one at a time.
Yes.
Because the world is a big place, as you know.
Yes.
And we're all, we're reading public or reading audience.
Yes.
Look at the United Kingdom and somebody like King Charles or whoever, no, I think it was his son, Prince William, who went to the West Indies.
Yes.
And this whole idea of reparations and the idea of having an apology.
Yes.
It's been very long in coming and hasn't actually been offered. It's like a member of the royal family will say, we realize that this was a horrible thing that has happened. Days of slavery were horrible and the royal family was part of it. But to actually give an apology, and this is the point that I'm making, to have an admission of guilt, we're not going to have that admission because legally it would oblige us to have some kind of payback.
And we already had an apology.
From whom?
From President Uhuru. He actually said, I'm giving you guys 288 acres, although you actually had 4,197 acres. We actually have an acknowledgement from President Ruto, who was then deputy, and even now he says these people have been marginalized, these people have been deprived, there's a lot of injustice on these people. What we are talking about here now is not just a verbal lip service apology. We're actually talking about apology and acknowledgement that is followed by some form of reparation that can actually make a difference to these people's lives.
We'll get pesa, mabadiliko. Nongoja, let's go for the chums first.
Yes.
You're sitting there, in, you know, quite happily, and some decree from a president says, Wanangu, go to the bank, prove that you're newbie, and here's $1,000,000. You see that happening?
Yes,
so that you have
it can actually happen. It has happened in other countries. If you go to Canada,
yes,
it has happened with the religious community. If you go to the Aborigines, it has happened.
Yeah.
It actually happens in civilized societies where, and remember, there's a ruling by the African, by the AU about the newbies here in Kenya.
But remember, the elephant in the room is that you're not meant to be here in the first place.
That is out of question now.
Yeah.
That's not an elephant in the room now.
Okay.
This is actually a peacock that is walking, strutting around in the room, saying these newbies are here to stay. They are part and parcel of this community.
Okay.
They should be recognized as a tribe. The South Asians
were engendering debate because the idea is this, you know, the motto, the slogan of the show.
Can you allow me to give you context?
Elucidation over confrontation. I'm not confronting you.
I understand.
I'm just hitting you with the, well, there's more than one elephant in the room.
Can I just give you context?
Do.
The South Asians came. I remember, I think they were called coolies or something like that, making the railways. And then they were settled and they were allowed to be in the community. And we all recognized them. The Nubians came as professional soldiers. We didn't get the same treatment. We are saying for what we lost. Because, I mean, I'm privileged to be here sitting, talking to you. But I have hundreds and thousands of people I grew with, people I know, who are completely excluded from the social, economic, and political progression of this country. And we are talking about Kenya at 60 years. We should be ashamed. I'm glad you said you feel ashamed.
And guilty.
And we need to actually give these people their right. That's the reparation we're talking about. It's not only money, but much more than that.
Okay, you were doing a list. You said, okay,
gazettement of the tribe as a tribe, because the minute we get gazetted as a tribe, it means we can walk proudly and say, we are a tribe here. Don't talk about us going back to Sudan. Yes.
White Kenyans are not leading the same struggle. Can you explain that? Where's your rationality? Unless I'm completely wrong. I haven't seen a delegation going to State House of, you know, white Kenyans saying, "Sisi tulikuja hapa, we don't know where the United Kingdom is." Why you? Why you?
Cut before the horse.
Okay.
For us,
explain.
For us, we lost land because of identity. The Wazungus, they have the land. So for them, identity is not a priority because they have the land, they have the economic power. In fact, if anything, probably they'll want to keep their profile low so that nobody asks about all this wealth and benefits that are enjoying in this society. For us, it is a way of accessing that.
We have the shades of what's happening post-Mandela, post-Zuma, Ramaphosa.
Yes.
It's a powder
Mugabe,
in those societies. Yes. So you're saying you're rung down from Wazungus.
You cannot compare. You know, you have to separate the wheat from the chaff. This is not the same.
Right. Yes.
Apples and oranges, no, it's not the same. You can't put that argument.
I understand. We don't have that much time. So we got to the idea of a gazettement, some sort of...
identity recognition.
Yes. And then what about participation in the socio-political life of the nation?
You see, that's the whole point. Yes. When you have rights, land rights, economic rights, you are able to participate. When you have people who for years, for decades, they are not able to get education, they are not able to get ID identification, they cannot even register as voters and so on. How do you start participating into all those levels? You can't. The exclusion is the biggest problem we have faced, and that's what we need to address.
Right. So have we now gotten the list of demands for the future out of the way, or are there some still pending which you were to express to me? Have you dealt with them?
So
there's going to be a kind of reparation, recognition of past guilt?
Yes.
Right.
And, of course, integration into the society. With that then comes all these other benefits that we're talking about. You don't need to list them. Yes.
Okay.
To your theme, is basically to get our people who have been excluded into the next Kenya after 60.
Right.
Okay. Having been excluded for 60 years.
Right. Okay. I want to get another very flippant question in your mind. I have a sort of ticking. We've finished the siasa. I was told Wanubi ni watu, there was something that we had to drink or people drank called Nubian gin.
Yeah.
And you were great gin makers. Are you still, despite the fact that you're Muslims, makers of gin? Where's that particular anomaly?
So that's a very sad, dark part of our history.
Oh dear.
And it all comes part of this exclusion. So in the 30s, the Nubians were actually farmers in the 4,107 acres. My granddad told me about even the Maasais would come and even raid our cattle. But they were farmers, they were pastoral, they kept cattle and so on. But then, as their land was being taken away and they got squeezed into 700 acres at that time, there was not much economic activity to do because farming was taken from them. So, and because those people coming from outside, including the Mau Maus, and they saw an opportunity. So they started making what we call the Nubian Weregi. you know, Weregi in Uganda, or the Nubian gene. So they started making the Nubian gin. It became very, very popular, and people came from far and wide to drink it. And it became the source of economic empowerment for our community, and the rich, they lived quite well. But of course, what happened with alcoholism, with money in of that kind of nature, the society became a very depraved society. And something had to be done. And that's when the religious aspect was invoked, and fortunately, by the 80s, they stopped. So as a community, we stopped the gin business.
One last question before I talk about you after self-revelation is that what is your attitude to the United Kingdom and to colonialism and to the empire? Because from the narrative that we've heard, you must feel a great attachment to Britain, the UK.
Zero attachment.
Okay.
Actually, I feel abandoned, and I feel I actually feel that that is the next phase. First of all, to fight for our identification and our rights. Then the next thing is to actually seek reparation, both from our government here, in our society here, and the British government.
So
because
in what way has the UK let you down?
Think about it this way: if you were by 1963, the South Asian community were given citizenship to go to the UK.
Exactly. Oh yes.
But the Nubis,
yes,
completely
and,
ignored.
And the people, the Sherpas.
Yes. Yes.
Gurkhas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now you can imagine we were very distinguished soldiers.
Yes.
Who we even have statues to our names.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
And yet there was nothing. They fought for nothing.
You lacked leadership. All along the way, there seems to have been a lack of leadership. You didn't have a Mahatma Gandhi, you didn't have a...
That's a sad reality,
yes.
That there was some bit of... until today, probably, there's this gap in leadership, there's this gap in people standing up for the community. But at the same time, you have to look at it from the perspective that these are...
If there'd been a sort of concerted,
yes.
we want,
yes.
Maybe you'd have ended up with the British... citizenship as well.
And we, the younger generation now, are saying, we want. And we want what our forefathers should have wanted.
Right.
So the Brits actually have a role to play in this.
Well, sadly, Daktari, we have to ask, we haven't got that much time left. We've got just about 3 minutes. So I'm going to ask, when in Ani, who are you?
Now, finally, umesema Daktari, si mwanangu tena.
Yes.
So, jina langu ni Dr. Ahmed Yakub Kalebi. Mimi ni daktari, mimi ni pathologist, na mimi ni mtoto wa Kibra, nimezaliwa Kibra, nimesoma Kibra, nimelelewa Kibra, mpaka university niko Kibra. Na Kibra ni nyumbani kabisa. Na mimi ni mnubi wa Kenya.
So could you, okay, we don't, the personal details don't really interest me. If you have an elite within that community,
yes,
the elite in my own family to share, as people do these days to share, was basically access to education.
Yes.
If I go back a generation, my grandfather never went to school, but he had an interaction with the colonials, and he took his son to school, and I am my father's son. So we know we're now generation two. My father could quote Shakespeare. Now I can quote even more Shakespeare. What about you?
So I was just very, very fortunate and lucky. When I was going to school, I mean, I had a lot of bright schoolmates, but because of that marginalization, discrimination, and oppression, a lot of the people never saw the value of school. They never had the opportunity to go to school. As a result, because I was just this bookworm and this lucky guy in Shadrach Kimalel Primary School in Gumo next to Kibra,
yes. The
teachers took interest in me, and somehow I was fortunate enough to continue with school
and
became a became a doctor.
But did
and
your
my,
parents? Did
absolutely.
Your parents, did your parents recognize that education was a good tool?
My mom,
teachers,
my family,
helping.
Yes.
Teachers are helping,
yes.
On one end, and at the other end, you've made
so
an impression.
So I'm very fortunate to come from a family, my immediate extended family, where my grandfather and my uncles, because I was raised by a single mom, in such a way that they valued education.
Right.
But a lot of the other people lost out from that completely. So you get to this, you know, Harlem type of situation where it becomes a vicious cycle. And then you can always blame and say, there is no leadership, there is no this, but these are people who are oppressed.
Right.
And as a result, I was the one who was had the escape velocity to get out of that, and a few amongst us. But in the last 10, 20 years, we've had a concerted effort, and our focus has been to say education is the key to success. Education is the way to unlock this. And we now have a group of more educated young Nubians who are actually now starting to fight. But we cannot access the system, so to speak. Yes,
right, exactly.
We can't access the system.
I want to give you 30 seconds to talk about the task force.
Yes.
The task force. What is this task force? What are you tasking? What are you forcing?
So the president set up a task force,
yes,
saying, we want you guys, this 298 acres is your private land. Can you guys tell us what you want to do with this private land and how can the government come in? So we are set up as a task force of Nubian community representatives together with government appointees working on this land to come up with proposals of how we can redevelop this land, 298 acres, for our economic empowerment.
Dr. We could go on forever. Thank you so much for the education that you've given me, and I doubtless to our listeners too. But it is time to stop. The clock decrees. So let's stop. Do continue to give us feedback, hopefully positive and reassuring, on the Twitter handle at Capital FM Kenya, or drop us a text or WhatsApp message on 0701-984-984. I've been talking to the chairman of the Task Force on Kenyan Nubian Affairs, medical doctor Ahmed Kalebi, and you've been listening to John Sibio Kumu on Wednesday. I'd like to say, as usual, thank you very much, most kindly, much obliged, until next time.